This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3046 for Monday, the 6th of April 2020. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for March 2020 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 76 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is: HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in March 2020.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today's show is the community news for March 2020, and joining me today is...
Hi, it's Dave Morris.
Hi Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, yeah. Well, yeah, other than being locked in my house and all that good stuff.
For those of you listening in the future, this is COVID-19 time.
Yes. It's odd how the whole concept of quarantining hasn't really got through to a lot of people. You know, it was explained, yes. Saying this to somebody the other day. Say you had 10 mice and you had them all in the cage and one of them got ill. What would happen? And say you split all those mice up and had them in separate cages and one got ill. What would happen? You know, it's quite a simple idea, but it's very, very strange when it's yourself and your neighbours and your friends and your family and everything, I guess.
The mind boggles, really.
I think it's quite hard to mistake this particular virus. There are some people who have it, but it's usually quite high fever for several days, you know. It's not just the passing cold that makes you sneeze and cough a bit in the majority of cases that I've certainly heard about. So, yeah. And... well, what we need is testing. We all need access to things where we can do an antibody test and say, oh, yeah, look at me, I've had it. I'm okay, I'm free, I can go where I want it because I can't catch it anymore. That's what we want.
Yeah, and we also need to know if that statement is valid and correct.
Well, yes.
And we'll only know that if people have been tested.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's not absolutely the case that we know that you can't catch it twice, although all the indications are really strong. You can tell I've spent the past N weeks reading everything I possibly can about coronavirus and all this sort of stuff. But it's one thing to do, I guess.
The mind truly, truly boggles. And unfortunately, the reason we don't have test kits, Dave, is why? Because patents on the patents, basically.
Oh, good grief. Yes. Oh, yeah. Why not? Yeah. Make sure those guys make some profit and the good of all. What's that? You can't make any profit from... makes you want to spit.
Anywho, for those of you, this is not this week in... this month in Corona 19, thankfully. It is, in fact, the HBR Community News for March 2020. And it's been a bit of a strange one for a lot of people. For more of us, it's been... the return to an ideal day, peace and quiet, stuck at home with the internet. So that's fine. We have had one new host, Dave. Actually,
you'd like me to say this guy's handle? No,
I'm just wondering, is this all too waffly for people? We just start again, and
I don't know. I mean, considering that the last show we're going to talk about in the month is all about people sitting and waffling. And personally, I found it really, really a lot of fun. Well, that's not to say people will enjoy listening to this necessarily, but I think it's an entirely valid thing to do.
Well, I'm going to not edit this because I don't believe in editing shows. So, guys, you can write in and tell us, is this too waffly or not? Do you want your HBR community news with or without coronavirus?
Punchy or not.
Anywho, the HBR Hacker Public Radio is a community news podcast network where the shows are released by people very much like you. In fact, released by people like you. So if you are stuck at home, bored, senseless, rather than going yet another internet meme search, why not record a HBR episode and send it in? And this show is the community news show where we take a monthly look at what's been going on in the HBR community. So can you welcome the new hosts?
Yes, champing at the bit there. CRVS is our new host, and we will hear obviously from him this month.
Excellent. Possibly not this month.
Well, the month we're talking about, let's say.
Yes, and it happens to be this month as well. So, as we always do, we go through the shows that have been released in the last month, so you can get a flavour for what they were about if you missed them. And failing that, just to make sure that everybody gets some sort of feedback on every show. So the first show that we had was the community news for the previous month. And there are zero comments on that, Dave.
Indeed. We're doing a good job of being non-controversial, obviously.
Yeah, that's annoying. We need to be controversial, Dave. How can we be controversial? Let's say free software sucks. Why don't we?
Coronavirus, it's. No, I won't go down that road.
No, exactly. So following day, apt to be a Tuesday probably, and it was the FOSDEM 2020 stand interviews by moi, and a show which was 1 hour and 32 minutes in long, but probably a lot longer than that to put it together.
Yeah, well, I think you need congratulations for having achieved it, because it's a massive opus that you've constructed there. I did enjoy it a lot. It's, as you know, as everybody knows, I'm sure now, I never made it to FOSDEM, but it was nice to hear about it at this level after the event. It was good.
Yeah, and it was really nice to have a stand there this year. It was very good. One day was enough, to be honest, on the stands. But
that worked out quite well, didn't it? Because
yeah,
two days of that would have been a nightmare. I think you'd never want to do it again.
Absolutely, would be wasted. Yeah. So the following day we had Carl, and this was Critique My Script episode 1. Where somebody throws themselves to the HBR community to get somebody to critique their Bash scripts. This is something that Dave will do for free, people. Whether you ask him to do it or not, he will do it for free.
I know. I should learn to shut up. Because I did make a few comments. But actually, my comments were as nothing compared to the ones that came in from the other members of the community. So
shall we go through it? So yes, what was the point of the script? It was QOTS crew generator, and he made a very nice page, actually.
Yes, you could go and look at the end results of the thing, which is quite impressive.
It's a B-17 Queen of the Skies air crew generator. I think this is for some sort of game, is it? And there are so many roles that need to be filled, and then it generates names for those roles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the script does.
Yep. So, yeah, I think it might be inappropriate to go through all of these comments in detail, because there's tons of, in my case anyway, lots and lots of brackets and dollar signs and stuff.
Can you give a summary of what your comments were about?
Yeah, I made, I think, just two comments. One was to say, because Carl was using a very, very strange form of arithmetic to increment the counter, I suggested that he use the pre or post increment arithmetic expression thingy that I've talked about in various of my shows. And I made a reference to one that did it, as you do. And so that was the first one. And the second one was talking about slicing things up based on fields. And he used a pipeline where he printed the thing and then cut it up. And I suggested that you could actually do it in Bash, not fully appreciating that he wasn't necessarily using Bash. So
yeah, that was kind of his point, yeah. But it's good to know how to do it in Bash. I liked Nobody's answer, which was, you know, taking a completely different approach. And something that actually frustrates me when you when you post a question on the forum and then you get, no, don't do it this way, do it this way. Somebody goes off on a complete tangent, not answering that you particularly have a reason for doing it that way. But his suggestion was to use the shuff command for shuffle. So you have a text file of first names and a text file of last names, and then merge them into two things, which is kind of a nice approach to doing the problem.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. I enjoyed reading that one. I was going to suggest shuff, but I wasn't entirely clear about the best way to do it. But I was pipped at the post, which is probably just as well.
So Carl replied, I've asked for the critique, so I appreciate the comments, Dave. I didn't have any strong reason for not using Bash, but it boils down to the most limited scripting I do is on a Raspberry Pi and other single board computer type devices, usually with Alpine Linux, which out of the box has bin sh symlink to BusyBox. So I work with that in lieu of installing Bash. I sort of like the extra challenge of not using Bashisms, even if it does make things a bit harder, uglier than it needs to be. I'm at a loss to explain where I came up with the triple parentheses for incrementing I. I just tried it on BusyBox and the two seem to work fine, although 3 does also. The plus form does not. As you know, that it would require Bash, though I'm familiar with that form. It just doesn't work with the constraints of BusyBox.
Fair enough. See, I have this mindset that says, well, we've achieved shells that do really smart things, so I do not want to use dumber shells. It's a bit like, you know, I want to have hammers and nails. I don't want rocks and bits of wood.
Yeah, but we've got low resource single board computers.
Yeah, I know. If I was ever cast adrift on an island or something, I'd probably go, oh damn, I wish I'd learned how to hit things with rocks. So I do appreciate that this is a failing on my part, but it's a mindset that's hard to shake.
And Carl also comments at Nobody. I looked at the stuff for this, but it's not a BusyBox built-in and not included out of the box with Alpine, although awk is, which is why I went with the generating random number pairs. So to say that I don't know what tools are available is perhaps a little unfair, as I state in the episode that I'm limiting myself to BusyBox built-ins. Imposing that limitation on myself is perhaps a bit silly, not at all, but is a fact that I would have to install something to get the additional functionality reference, and that may not always be possible or desirable in embedded applications. Anyway, I wrote the above, so I'll leave it there. But I decided to double check. I usually refer to BusyBox URL as a single page reference to the built-in stuff isn't listed, but the user bin shuff is indeed a symlink to BusyBox on one of my Alpine devices, which is a little bit annoying. When I work on a script like this, I usually do it on my laptop that has all the full tools on it, but I double check against the BusyBox page to make sure I'm not using a command or option to a command that BusyBox doesn't support. Then I test on the device.
So, excuse me, bring up the mic so I can cough in it. So nobody says unclean. Now I can't transfer over the mumble. To see what tools, this is Nobody speaking, see what tools your BusyBox comes with, you should run it without options. BusyBox is quite configurable, so you should check documentation generated with the same configuration as your target. That web page is either very outdated or generated from some sample configuration. Besides, Ash also has $random, so using awk isn't really necessary. It demonstrates random being constrained by the length of a string. Here is also a fix for Dave's suggestion, and he suggests a different way of achieving it. If you use pre-increment, the I equals one is also unnecessary, he says. So good point. Yep. You've done several, so shall I do his second one? Standalone yep. increment in ASH. Also, if you want the double brackets I plus plus increment for ASH, you could pretty easily replicate it with colon dollar two open brackets I plus plus two close brackets. The colon is a sort of a null statement, but the shell parses the stuff and actually action whatever's on that line, so you can do sort of secret things through that route. Yeah.
Did you cover that already?
I have not covered that. No. It's a thing.
Also, go on. Do we have shows from Nobody about Bash?
I don't recall.
Oh dear! Oh dear! Oh dear!
That's a yeah. That would be. Wouldn't that be good?
It's very. I'm not angry, Dave. I'm not angry. Just very disappointed.
Disappointed, I would imagine. Yeah.
There's somebody who has time to write comments. And talking through them would, you know, do a show. As we're just one show short of filling up the queue for the next 2 weeks. Seems such a pity. Such a pity.
Yeah, especially when you can do it on the basis of here's something you might have tried to do and here's a better way of doing it sort of thing, rather than some great long production like some people do, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Pages and pages and stuff.
Now that we've done the mandatory request a show thing, Carl replies, or are you finished with that colon thing? Actually, a show on that, can you contact Nobody? Or do we have an address for Nobody? Probably not, given this.
No.
Ah, yes. Nobody, can you send in a show, please, about that colon thing, how it works? Thank you. Carl replies, neat. Echo double random thing percent length. That's neat. First time I tried it, though, I got the same number twice in a row. That's the thing about random, I guess. Probably just a fluke, but it's interesting to test in rapid succession, for example, in a loop, to see if it's not prone to do that with awk random number generator. To be clear, you're not suggesting a pre-post increment works on BusyBox ASH, correct? They don't appear to be they don't appear to, unless I'm doing it wrong. Ash, and then it gives an error, to which Nobody replies in Dave Morris's voice.
Yes, I've not used Ash very much. Like I said, I try and avoid these simpler shells. But a lot of them used to have let. So let something equals, and then an arithmetic expression. So you could do let I equals I plus one. But I don't know. My knowledge about these things comes from CSH, TCSH, SH, and Bash. And then having learned Bash, I've tried very hard to forget all the other ones because I hated them. But no prejudice at all. No. So, yeah, I wouldn't like to give a definitive answer. So Nobody says, referring to command substitution, the dollar two brackets. Is that what that is? No, it's not. It's an arithmetic thingy. I doubt there's any significant difference between AUKT random number generator and ASH's equivalent. Certainly not any that would matter for a project like this. And he said they just threw up an Alpine container, and at least there it works just fine. What command did you run that produced this error message? That was one that said ASH, arithmetic syntax error. And shall I just carry on? Carl says,
yeah, please.
Version 3. Nobody, not sure what I did earlier to produce that arithmetic error. I just tried it again. Your examples are working. Sorry about that. I just did a third version, and he refers to his latest version of the script, greatly simplified, no loops, and just using shuff repeatedly per Nobody's example to get the first and last name. And he demonstrates
very clever
that it works on a pastebin link. thanks both to both Dave and Nobody for the feedback. So it's quite a fun dialogue, I think.
Yeah, very much.
Interesting. I learned some stuff.
So did I. Would have liked to learn it in the medium of podcasts, but fine.
Maybe one day.
Yes. The next day had me in stitches. A funny thing happened the other day because I posted this and there's a picture of the source of the noise in the show notes. And I was way off the mark with what it was. This was Mr. X's investigation. And we will not comment more on that. Oh, there are two comments to the show. Let's see, did they give anything away? Tukatoroto says, great storytelling. I love the storytelling in this one, and the use of sound effects really made my morning.
Mr. X replies, we great storytelling. Hi, Tukatoroto. Many thanks for the kind words. Glad you enjoyed the episode. It certainly had us stumped when it happened. All the best, Mr. X. So, yeah.
Dun-dun-dun. Mystery at Mr. X's house.
Yeah. And the footsteps across the room and all that stuff, all the sound effects. Loved it. Very, very nice.
Super duper. Anywho, next day, Kevin Ahuka, keeping unwanted messages off Fediverse. ActivityPub conference, techniques for fighting spam and unwanted messages on Fediverse, to which I replied as a person, not a HPR admin. I disagree. Hi, Ahuka. As you know, I am enjoying the series. I don't think that charging for messages, however small, is the answer. It is socially unfair to impose a financial barrier that many may not be able to afford. To quote my mother, it's not a lot to have, but it's a lot to want. I had to send 100 applications to get my first job, and that would amount to $1 in your proposal. Put that into context where your income is $41 a month, and you see how it excludes the poorest nation. In any event, this was tried with email back in the 1990s and 2000s and failed. I include a link. However, that didn't stop companies from trying to profit from the idea. Basically, AOL and Yahoo offered companies a way to bypass that mechanism and put spam directly into people's inboxes for a fee. I also have concerns on any solutions that requires a verified identity in order to participate. As soon as you do, you stop being federated and start being a walled garden, not to mention the registration process that will be needed, and then that would need to be taxed and surely limited to authorized providers, etc. I'm glad of the chance to think about this, so please keep them coming.
Yeah, interesting. So Hooker replies, further discussion. To place Serge's ideas in context, it should be pointed out first that he intended that the price paid on an email would go to the recipient, which is why he said it would be a wash for most people. As a recovering economist, I do believe that anything that is provided with no charge at all is likely to be abused, and that's what we're talking about. It's also worth noting that Serge's proposal about charging was a way to get around the only other feasible way to control abuse, which is to sharply limit who can send messages. I can right now write a rule that says anyone not already in my address book can't successfully send me an email. I just delete on site any email from someone not in the book.
Yeah, I'm not sure I particularly agree with that because that was also tried where people get paid to receive emails and the advertisers didn't like it because you had click farms who were farms of people who were just hired into call centers and all they did all day was clicking on web pages to get the revenue. So that won't work either.
What a wonderful world we live in.
Well, yeah, I think... Yeah, it's free speech, and it's also if somebody comes to the door selling you crap, you turn them away, basically. It's a problem, I get it, but everything has to be balanced, and the idea of trying to do it with a financial incentive, what will happen is somebody will find a loophole and exploit it, and by the time the exploitation has become evident, it's a business model and you can't get rid of it because that is now how things are done and you're ruining the messaging economy by taking that out and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah. Think of the children.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I just need to step away for a second because I don't know.
I'll go grab a coffee. How about we do a truncated silence? Thankfully, we haven't mentioned it, Dave. Nobody will notice. Back in five, folks.
Okay.
I'm back.
Me too.
So we just spent 2 hours waiting for the other person. Anywho, the next day, Hexbug and BattleBots, which was by Operator, and it was a nice little introduction to these Hexbugs, BattleBox things, and how you can customize them and use them. Found it very interesting myself.
Sounds like a lot of fun, actually. Yeah, wish I was young again. Well, I had young kids. That's an excuse.
Grandkids, Dave, grandkids.
Who knows?
To which Windigo replied, or did you want to do it?
I don't mind. I'll do it if you like. You've done more than I think. Windigo says, great episode. My partner uses Hexbug or similar robots in her STEAM lessons. STEAM being an acronym for science, tech, engineering, art, and math. But I'd never heard of BattleBots. They sound like loads of fun. Please keep the episodes coming. You have a knack for doing episodes that exemplify the hacker ethos while being fun and unique.
Okay. Hear, hear. Agree. Operator is very much like a box of chocolates. You never know what he's going to throw at you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm enjoying them, I must say.
Resourceful fellow.
Sorry?
I said he's a resourceful fellow. He's got a lot of skills.
He is. Or no, maybe he just talks about stuff where the rest of us don't. So, yeah, there's a lesson to be learned there. I do like the acronym STEAM as opposed to STEM. I like the chucking the art in there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good. It's good. I've not been involved personally, but it looks like a lot of fun.
Cool. So, the next day, might be Mike. What is quantum computing and why we should care? What is quantum computing hype about and what is it that quantum computers will be able to do? OMG, this was a brilliant episode. Thank you very much. It really cleared up an awful lot of stuff for me.
I found myself following along up to a point, and then he sort of streaked off away from my level of understanding. So I say this so often. I need to listen again because I think he was doing a brilliant job of explaining something which is very hard to explain. So yeah, wonderful, excellent.
A great episode
to do this thing. Yeah.
I think I've been watching a lot of videos, you know, physics and engineering videos about quantum computing because it's something that's mentioned out there, you know, the whole tag along quantum on the end to it and you'll be able to sell your milkshakes for a higher profit, you know. But I think when I heard this episode, it just, everything that I had picked up clicked together for me a little bit. And as he says, if you claim to understand quantum computing, you don't. So, very good.
Yeah. My daughter's best friend is doing a PhD in the physics department down the road, and she's working in the quantum area. But I've not had a chance to to ask her, could you just explain what it is you're doing? And whether she would answer me anyway, I don't know.
Sure you have a microphone around when you're doing that.
Yeah, if that ever happens. Yeah. But I'm so intrigued to know what it is she's doing for a PhD. But anyway.
The following day, first-time host, CRVS, and...
There was a comment to this, even though it was in the future. Should we...
Oh, okay. Go fire ahead. Yeah. I thought Mongo's, I did. Yeah, go on.
Mongo says, very interesting talk. It wasn't enough information for me to build my own quantum computer, but I did find it interesting. Looking forward to episode 2.
That's when the government come in and shut us down because we've... built our own quantum computers in the basement.
When that day will come, that would be fun.
Yeah. Okay, next day, Monads and Haskell. A hopefully not too rambly introduction to functors and monads in and out in Haskell. And needless to say, this was from a new host, CRBS, who's also one of the Wednesday night D&D people, I believe.
Okay.
And we had, surprisingly, oddly enough, one of our hosts, Tuka Toroto, had a comment on the show. Welcome. Welcome and thanks for the first great show. You jumped directly into the deep end with a show about monads and the category theory. When I saw it in the queue, I wanted to listen to it immediately. Instead, I saved it for the morning walk today so I could concentrate on it properly.
Very good. Yes, yes. They're obviously quite able to communicate in great depth on the subject, the two of them. CRVS replies, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I hope I was clear enough and not too rambly. I didn't go into the monad laws because it was already difficult enough to be somewhat coherent.
This is excellent that there is now a Haskell community developing here on HPR.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to be one of them. Let's put it that way. I'm still struggling with what
I will. I'll be
is.
Happily at the party, sitting, listening as people talk about it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The approach where you listen and try and absorb, and then gradually
exactly.
put the pieces together is good. But it's a very, very slow way to learn stuff. So it's there you go.
The following day, we had Archer72 with the first of a soundscape, which is our journey through sound, not so much sight. It was for the Matera train and the announcement that the train would be late due to a server failure, which was awesome to hear. Just bugs everywhere.
Yeah, wasn't it strange? And the server fault seemed to leave all the announcement systems saying the same thing over and over again in a rather bizarre way. It was some sort of strange rap music going on in the background.
I love the acoustics of the building and how that interacted with each other. I was very close to getting a migraine from it, but I'm glad I didn't have to wait 2 hours for my train. That would drive me nuts, but it was a relatively short episode, so nice.
Yeah.
We had enough to get the feel and no more.
You assumed that there was a sort of a sound delay caused by propagation of sound. There could also have been a delay caused by the software just being out of sync with itself. Something like that. It all sort of rotated out of sync in a bizarre way. It was an excellent thing. Great thing to record. Definitely have a recorder with you when you hear a thing like that.
Absolutely. So my new Samsung tablet, Mr. X shoving it in our face, why don't you? There were no comments because we were all annoyed with him. So,
it was interesting to hear. It sounds like a fun machine. And as he drove to work, he's turning into Dave Yates on his way to work along the Edinburgh City bypass or whatever. So, yeah, cool.
No, very nice. And nice to hear about people's setups because I was thinking of getting a tablet as a replacement for an e-reader. And then, the price was, I can't justify that sort of price, 212 pounds plus free shipping. But also then a lot of the quirkiness of the software and stuff means that I don't think I would buy that tab is essentially it, which in itself is a good thing.
No, I'm keeping away from tablets personally. My old Nexus, what was it, 7, was it? Was that what they were called, the early Nexus tablets? I think Mr. X had one as well. It's still alive, but it's very, very, very slow. But I don't think I want any more.
So the following day, we had an introduction by Daniel Pearsons, and I love these episodes. You really get to know about people. So brilliant. Also, great work there on the SQRL protocol, which you did a show on previously.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, it's interesting interesting to hear about him. He's a very resourceful fella. There was a comment.
Yeah, Farhad.
You go do that. In that gap there, I will do the comment from Clive too. History, he says, it's fascinating to hear about the early internet and internet commerce. Thank you for sharing this history.
That was very cool. Moving on to the next episode, which was Pi Core and Raspberry Pi 1 Model B from Claudio. And I hadn't thought to do that. I have 4 additional Raspberry Pis in my of the original ones in my collection not being used. But this might be a very useful little thing to do with some of them.
Well, I felt the same way, actually. I have one Model B, Pi 1B or whatever they called it. And it's sort of given up the ghost. I think the SD card died and I haven't used it. It's just sitting around. So this would be a great way to resurrect it, I suspect. So good pointer. Yeah, excellent.
And Windigo says, minimal distributions are the best. I've tried out TinyCore a few times over the years, but had no idea they made a Raspberry Pi edition. What a pleasant surprise. Awesome.
Yeah, cool.
32-bit time travel, Linux in-laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software. Part of the series, Linux in-laws, and the full show notes are available on their website. There were no comments on this show.
It was an interesting show. Was this the one they were talking about the time issue, 32-bit time, which is obviously something that most of us will know about. But it was good to hear some information about it. And the other thing was the crook flaw, whatever it is, the Wi-Fi thing, where you can gather certain amounts of data off the Wi-Fi as things shut down and come back to life again. It's not a very good summary, I'm sure, but it was interesting to know a little bit more about it.
Yeah, and they also covered the KR0 crack vulnerability, kernel wireless wiki as a list of their devices, general problems around the time, and some sample code demonstrates the issue requiring 32-bit systems.
The time T stuff and all that.
Yeah.
Cool.
So the next day, Taj sent us in a show requested on our Matrix channel, which was how to bridge Freenode IRC rooms to matrix.org. And this is from Clacky, and Dave Lee helped on this one. And this is a good step-by-step intro. Very good.
Yeah, no, this is very useful. I made a mental note to try it. I haven't done so yet, sad to say. But it looked like a very useful way of having the one client that gets you to many places. There's a Telegram thing as well, I believe. So I'd quite like to do that at some point.
Yeah, but does that mean then that you need to do your own server to run all those bridges?
Don't know.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Because I currently now have Rambox, and that is basically a hack where it uses a web client for all these different protocols. But if I could get them all into the one place, that would be absolutely awesome. Mm-hmm. And if it meant I had to run my own instance, that would be less awesome, but it would still be okay. Tatu had a comment, which said, did not know this. Thanks for the info, Taj. I didn't know how to do this, but now I do. I can now be both Tatu and non-Tatu on Matrix. That's still pretty satisfying.
There you go.
It's a long-running thing. HBR has been going on so long that I think Tatu has changed his email address and contact information more times than some people change their underwear.
Yes, don't want to meet those people, mind you.
No, that's true. But now, thanks to Corona, you don't need to. Following day, decentralized hashtag searching and subscriptions in Federation Social Network. No guesses, no clues, no surprise. It was by Ahuka, another activity pub, 2019, and a proposal to you on how to use hashtag and find the subscribed content. This one had me surprised, I must say, because it never dawned me that hashtags wouldn't propagate, and what and all the security and privacy implications as a result of doing that. So yeah, if you haven't heard this episode, please listen to it.
It was, it opened my eyes too, I have to say. Hadn't completely thought of it. It's sort of one of those things you think, oh, of course, yeah, but right, yeah. How do you fix it? So, and the talk that is referenced sounds like it's well worth a look of interest in that sort of thing. Haven't done it yet, yep. But I plan to.
And this was another Operator one. Wii U is long dead. Long live Wii U! Exclamation mark. Operator discusses how to jailbreak the Wii, essentially. He has already done a previous episode on this, and this was an update to that. Essentially, a lot of the original resources are kind of gone away insofar as the community, you know, there are not that many original Wiis out there, and in order to hack the games and stuff, it's still possible, but he gives you a few tips on how to do your homebrew stuff yourself, if you're into that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any of this sort of kit, and my kids are not quite into this sort of stuff anymore. So yeah.
Well, we dusted off. We didn't buy one. We got one for free from the neighbors, and the kids use the music dance game. And then, because we're in with the corona thing, they dusted it off and have been using it a little bit, you know, to do some exercise inside.
Mm, sounds good. Yeah, absolutely. I think my daughter's heavily into Animal Crossing at the moment. It's a whole different area of game playing. Yeah, on a something or other. What is?
Son was on about that class category A, B, and C type stuff. Oh god.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, it's it passes me by, I'm afraid.
Get her to do a show.
Do you know the number of times I've said to both of my kids, "You could do a show about that on HBR." Oh yeah, I could do. Yeah, I'll think about it. In fact, my daughter came back from her degree. She's still doing an MSc, got one more semester to go. And she said, oh, this is really interesting. Maybe I could do some of the stuff I've been taught about on HBR. And I said, yeah, go for it. And then she says, oh, dear, I'm really too busy. I can't do it.
Here's the microphone. How about we take the first take of it? And then later, when you have time, you can update it.
Yeah. We will work on that.
So Archer72 sent in another one where the server was actually fixed and ambient sound. And to be honest with you, my one comment on the original one would be to, can you please send us in an ambient recording of Union Station just in general? And this was awesome. I really like these type of episodes. You need to listen to them with headphones and at normal speed, obviously, but it's worth the sacrifice.
Yeah, there's something wonderful about just hearing the sounds of a place, the typical sounds. So yeah, I have been. If I hadn't been stopped from going to the zoo, I've got a membership at the Edinburgh Zoo, and as I go there, the noises there are amazing. I keep thinking, oh God, why didn't I bring my recorder? I could have taken some. There's some ambient sounds of the zoo. So when I get back there, I shall try it. Go on.
And I've been meaning to, again, now that I don't go to work, some mornings are just pure, you know, the sound of the rain and the sound of the streets. And just, I've been tempted to take my recorder and just walk my commute into work and then just turn off.
Yeah.
I don't know how interesting that 1.5 hours of boredom would be, but yeah, fine.
Do samples of it, perhaps. Don't know. That's the best way.
That's what the fast forward button is, folks.
Yes, speed it up 100%.
And the next day, solo magic, playing magic without the gathering, Klaatu. And I didn't know where he was going with this, but then it was... where Magic the Gathering is a tabletop game that you play with loads of other people, etc., etc., and he gets basically useless cards, and then how to build a game based on the useless cards that you have, and how can you play it by yourself. That is essentially the show, and it's very good what he ended up doing. It's classic.
Yeah, impressive. Certainly prepared to spend a good amount of time and brain power on doing these things. So all power to him.
Yeah. The next day, Mr. I Do Stuff Better Than Ken published his show, Making a Raspberry Pi Status Display with Your 3A Plus and an Old Monitor and Magic Mirror 2. Dave, awesome show.
Well, thank you.
You have. No, I knew you had this, and I already set up two magic mirrors around the house. Neither of them are as nice as this, and I intend to steal your stuff, except for the Edinburgh bus routes.
Well, you never know. It might be interesting.
Yeah, actually.
Give me a shout. Dave, the 44's just coming.
Dave! So the weird thing is I put the news, you know, the news feed entry down at the bottom, which I don't like, actually. I would prefer it to be the whole news article and then go to the next whole news article, you know, like in a display. I don't really like the way it's at the bottom like that. Mm-hmm. But I put in the Dutch, you know, the national Dutch news and the national English news from the BBC and from RTE in Ireland. So I've got the three national news ones. But I've also got the local one here and the local one where my parents live. So you get this really random random collection of news stuff that goes past. It's actually quite hilarious.
Yeah, that's a nice idea, actually. By the way, if you use the remote control thingy, then one of the options there, you can go into modules and tweak them. And one of the tweaks for that particular module, the news one, is that you can show part of or the whole article. Well, it takes up all your screen potentially, but you can change the level at which it displays. Though I don't know how you do that as a permanent thing in the config. If it's available, it must be possible. Sorry, go on.
I have it that it displays quite a lot of the article now underneath, so that's close enough for Jazz.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah,
issue with the news feed is it's very much, it's an active thing that gets you active, whereas the magic mirror in itself is just a display there, and you want to know what time it is, and you want to know the next bus. It's very passive. I want to keep it as passive as possible and not be a source of agitation.
Yes.
Is that weird?
Not really, no. I would think the same, although I do get active stuff that says, oh, there's a comment just come in for HBR and things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wanted both of those things. So I found the news incredibly depressing in the past few weeks.
And, exactly.
And so I've reduced all my news consumption down to just those banners, but even that can be pretty pretty grim. So yeah, let me switch the damn thing off completely.
The next day, why use GNU Auto Tools? Six good reasons why you should use a build system by Klaatu, and I agree with all of them. He also mentioned Dan Moshko saying on the Linux and Tech Show back in the day about Linux does have a universal packaging system. It's called GNU. It's called make install.
Yeah. It's fascinating. But see, I'd gone through a process of, I had to use this a lot back in the day when we had first started getting Unix systems in my work. And that was in the sort of late 80s, maybe. Early 90s, and I had ended up with one on my desk, a workstation on my desk running Ultrix, and I used to install things on it, and it was all in this format because that's all there was. And so I got very much used to using, as a consumer of this thing, I got used to using it, and it just seemed great. But then I moved to Linux, and then I didn't sort of dismissed it. Oh, that's for that Alteryx thing. I don't really want to use that anymore. So I use packages and stuff. And to stop and review that viewpoint, I'm terrible for adopting viewpoints, which maybe are not entirely sensible. It was quite a revelation to me.
Exactly. And I have this feeling that whatever goes around comes around, and sooner or later the paradigm of computing shifts and blah 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 blah, and now we're back to like source control, continuous development and automation. Yeah, do you really need a package manager, or is make install sufficient in order to, is that even cleaner because you have more control on the packages? So you're seeing industry shift to using make and as even a more pure form of what the developer wanted. So yeah, it's well, if you haven't listened to the show and you're dealing with software, well worth a listen, as always, to Tattoo Shield.
Yeah, I certainly found it quite a revelation and a mind-changing episode.
And if your mind wants to be blown, the following day he's done a very, very detailed, and I will compliment him on his show notes, which sometimes, I must say, are a little bit sparse, but he has... The reason they're good is because I copied and pasted them from the introduction to GNU Auto Tools, which was on opensource.com, and I pasted them in here under the terms of the Creative Commons license, which brings up another topic. And there's no comments on that episode as yet. If you're not subscribed to opensource.com, I highly recommend that you do, because there are 6 posts a day, and all of them are interesting. Even if it's just a quick scan, and you scan through it and you think, yeah, that's not really relevant for me. But I find myself reading the majority of their stuff, higher than 50% of their stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I've certainly looked. I don't sort of read it in a regular basis, but certainly found some excellent things there.
Throw it in your feed and see what happens. Now, COVID-19, work from home, stream day one. The couple of HPR characters decide to spend their social distancing time being social. And I will put in brackets there, in a proper way, by using remote tools and not, as some of my neighbors are doing, setting their chairs outside in their front garden and then talking to people as they go past.
Shouting over the fence or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anywho, how likely are we to get COVID-19, about the markets, Python, growing plants, audio book club, the saga of doom, doom, doom. More news on that later. Stay tuned to this station. Onboard single Raspberry Pi computers. Why haven't you done a show about that, Taj? Emacs in GNU org mode, and Nano for the win. I like these. If you enjoy the HPR New Year show, this is kind of the same vein.
Oh yeah.
And thank you for Taj for doing these.
Yes. It's one of those that I came away from thinking, oh, let's go and write a comment and say how much I enjoyed it, because I bloody don't. Terrible for forgetting to do it. But yeah, I thought this was great. And it's just what I needed, you know. Some people having interesting and sensible chat about stuff that's rattling around at the moment. And it was great. I really enjoyed this a lot. And it's quite a trio there who were having some interesting discussions. So yeah, thank you.
So there were 2 comments, both on Linux in-laws episodes from previous shows, and one was by Yay Hello. Heard Chris Zimmerman talking about LBW on Foss Weekly, and mentioned your podcast. Also was an old Outlaws listeners, so started listening to the new in-laws show now today. Seems nice so far. Only listened to 20 minutes.
Cool. That was Bitten, by the way.
Bitten. Not yet.
There was a comment on the second of the Linux in-laws by Claudio M. Thanks to these episodes, I realised that Chris Zimmerman was also interviewed on Floss Weekly number 568, where he talks about Linux Bierwanderung. I thought the voice sounded familiar, so I had to do some research. And yes, it's the same Chris from Linux In-Laws, and he references
Super
Twit TV show. Yeah, yeah, I heard that Floss Weekly somewhat late, so... But it was good. Yeah, he did a great job. That Linux beer hike, he said, was a translation of it. Sounds like quite a fun thing to do. And it's been in the UK many times too. I hadn't realised.
So you had switching on to the mail list archive. There was the HPR show notes question from mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. Can you get a summary mm-hmm. of that or?
Well, I guess I'm a natural-born archivist and like to have continuity in the things that get archived. And I was remarking on the fact that in many cases, show notes being posted with links to other places for the sort of bulk of the notes. And also links to personal sites and that type of thing. And although this is great for the moment the show comes out, in a longer term, from an archival point of view, the so-called bit rot results in the loss of some of these links. And that's really yep. a rather sad state of affairs. You go. I mean, I do this a lot because I'm looking at tags and that type of thing, and I go to older shows and it says, "See my thing on such and such," and you click and it's dead long, long, long ago because I'm looking at old shows, and you think, "Oh, it's so sad that that's gone." I just have a personal reaction to that makes me very, very sad about it. And just as an aside from that, I in researching some of my shows where I witter on about what I did in the past 45, 50 years ago, trying to find references to any of the things I'm talking about is incredibly hard because the bit rot has taken them, or maybe they never yeah. got there in the first place. You know? So it was really just to say, can we do something about this? That was what my note was about.
So Kevin Ahuka says some degree this is unavoidable. Thing about links that no longer work. Older people need to understand that older pages have links that no longer work.
That's true. That's true. But see, I don't know. I see a lot of people these days, just to make an analogy, collecting up old tools and stuff off eBay, the sort that somebody's clearing out a yeah. house and they sell the whole garage full on eBay. And I've got a few here. My neighbor left. He's now died, but he moved away. And he was a carpenter and he had a whole workbox full of tools rusted to hell. And I've got some of them here that I haven't started yet. Repairing them, getting them back to use. And
have you, know, you see, subscribed?
Look, people doing that. It's gone.
My Mechanic on YouTube?
No.
Have you seen that channel?
I haven't.
My Mechanic. Right, remind me to send you a link to that, My Mechanic.
Sounds good.
It is absolutely awesome, 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 awesome. But anyway, back to this.
The general principle is one that a lot of people would appreciate, I guess. But go on.
I'll just go through some of the comments from people first, and then I'll give you my own personal opinion, which is one of the comments. Jason S. Dodge says, my strategy of not providing show notes has paid off. No.
good comment. I like it. Make me laugh.
Klaatu is asking for clarification before he disagrees with us, I reckon. I'm going to skip over mine for a minute. Look for Kevin. Yeah, okay. Okay, I'll go over mine because from my point of view, there's two aspects to this. We can't be expected to keep everything on the internet, and that's fine. But if somebody releases a show and says a link will be in the show notes, or I'm talking about something and it's in the show notes, then it should be in the show notes. If it's part, you have to remember that people who listen to this this network that we're on here, maybe at work, probably not now, but say, imagine somebody driving, delivering rubber duckies in the US. What do you call them? Truckers. Truckers. Why can't I think of that word? Okay, truckers. Long distance truckers away from any base station, and their entire access to the episode is what's in the show notes of that episode. So there should be sufficient in the show notes to support the show 100%. Additional extraneous information can be attached to the show as a link to another site. That's fine. But from the point of view of the show, it should be in the show notes. You're giving us an episode, and it's like, and if the show notes for that are somewhere are with the show, that's great, because the whole bundle is the episode under a CC license. But if you take half of that and say, oh, the script is over here that I'm now talking about, well, you're polluting the license by putting it over there. Because now once it's over there, even though it's available and may be available for 20 years, even though it's over there, it still may not be under the same license that the show was released. So was it released under a Creative Commons CC BY-SA license, even though it's on your website? Because I can't find any license information on your website. So therefore, we now need to search your website. Is your website licensed under that license? Am I allowed to take that show in or not? So my solution to this is send us in proper show notes to support your show. If you say it's referenced in the show, then reference it in the show. It's very, very simple. Very, very simple to a point, as in it's hard to define it. But if you're saying, well, if you want more information, then you can get it on my blog. That's absolutely fine. Am I making sense there?
Yes, I think so. I've certainly subscribed to the view that an integral bundle, if that makes any sense, is a highly desirable thing to produce, which is why I try to produce such things myself. And also I redesign the way things get put onto archive.org, so the entire bundle gets where appropriate gets put together and dropped there, so that if HBR is gone, then you could still go and refer to it on archive.org. That's why.
So I give to, I actually should stick to the email, because that's what I was referring to. So I did an episode on adjusting the height of an ironing board, and it's a stupid episode. But I discuss in that episode, there's going to be a picture in the show notes. Then that picture should be submitted as part of your show, and it should be in the show notes. Today with a techie episode back in 2005, Iron Geek did a show, and he has a link to his site there. And I listened to his episode again, which is awesome, by the way. And everything that he has in the show notes to that episode is sufficient. There's nothing in that show that would require you to go to the website, but going to the website helps. So Today with a Techie was not specifically known for having super show notes, to be honest with you, but that show was self-standing, because he explained everything that you needed in the episode. But if you were interested, a full description and the visual cues were given in his website, which, yes, it might be no harm to take a PDF of that and stuff it on archive.org, but then we're adding to our burden on as the janitors. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure, yeah. That was part of my motivation in putting forward this point, that I think I said that in the past I'd managed to repair, in quotes, shows that where things had gone missing by going to the Wayback Machine and doing the stuff. But it's really quite a lot of work.
Yeah. And I went on to say about Kevin O'Brien's show. He did a show on Firefox updates, which is an excellent balance of, if you want to know what should and should not be in the show notes, use that as a reference, because there's enough on his website, and then he's got a blog post that can support it. And if he sends us a PDF of that blog post, that would even be fine as well. Lost in Bronx made a note there, and I'm disagreeing with Lost in Bronx, which I think must be the first time I ever have disagreed with him. By my way of thinking, there is no moral weight upon us as a community to deliver anything other than the historical experience to future listeners, to whom the episode will perforce be nothing but history anyway. I completely disagree with that. Hacker Public Radio is dedicated to sharing knowledge, so there is absolutely a moral weight on us to provide the information in the show to each and every listener, regardless of when they hear it. And I point you back to Iron Geek Show on 2005. If he referenced something in there that was no longer, that's still valid, we're still got Wireshark, we still got Ethernet networks, we still got thingy, just because the show happens to be 15 years old, doesn't mean it's out of date. If you provide enough information in there to be able to recreate it, good and well. Also, we're all using tools here that go back to stuff in the 1960s, commands, grep, sed, awk, ed. These are all tools that we use day in, day out. They were all done when we were all, when Dave was a lad, like. So, in fairness, this stuff isn't going away.
It's very long time ago.
Your definition of what relevant is immaterial. The show, if you're releasing a show, everything that you need, it's your choice what you just define as everything, but I may disagree with you. But if you're giving us a show, you're breaking the whole moral part of it if you only give me half of it and everything I need to support that show isn't available. I'm waffling on now, Dave. This is where you should stop me.
It is a difficult one. I mean, I have the particular view that I think that the maintaining some sort of timelessness of this resource is a highly desirable thing, because I think somewhere out in the future, people coming back to look at this sort of stuff, saying, what did these guys get up to back in those long ago days? Finding all the holes will be, you know, pretty disappointed, and to me that's a sad thing. I take the point that we have to ask the question: is that what we're about? Are we trying to build a perpetual information source? And I guess it's a valid question to ask that.
Yeah, I think it is, and you're right. It would be nice to be able to do that, but we can't. But within all practicalities, what we can do is give this as a unit. And if you've got enough in the unit to be able to do it, then fine. For example, if you're referencing a major distro like Ubuntu or Debian or whatever, then you don't need to supply the documentation, because that's probably more than likely going to be archived, or you'll be able to find a CD of that. But if you're talking about a script that you've written that is available nowhere else and that you discuss it in the show, then it needs to be included in the show.
Yeah.
At least in the upload, and we can host that then on HPR. If we host it on HPR, we know what the license is, or we make sure the license is compatible with the entire thing, and we can put that on archive.org. Because remember, even though archive.org scrapes the internet, it just takes one person to put in a robots.txt file on that domain, and then that's gone. All that information from that entire domain is gone. Admittedly, they will never archive your website ever again. So very few people do that. But archive.org is, unless the license is explicitly stated, it can be removed at any time. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I sort of started off this discussion, and then I went into lockdown, because suddenly occurred to me that I'm in the vulnerable group, that I catch it and there's a good chance I ain't going to exist no more. So I got a little bit sort of help, and sort of lost the plot a bit. So anyway, that's what happened.
No, it's a good one, because it brought up several things there for me, like just a one-liner to point to your website. That's not sufficient. That's not sufficient on some shows. On other shows, it is sufficient, because you've covered, like the Lost in Bronx, or not the Iron Geek Show. He discussed everything in it, So the link to his episode was supplementary material, whereas the linuxinlaws.eu one is not sufficient because they're discussing an actual script that's in the show notes on their site and not on, on the HPR website. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. It just makes more work because we now need to, from your point of view, you want to archive. From my point of view, I now need to check, is the copyright correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, it's... just upload show notes, please, people. Thank you. We move on.
Yeah.
Let's see. Case of disappearing links. Do you want to do this? Is it the same thing?
It is. It's Austin Brooks doing a change of subject, I think.
Interview from FOSDEM. Amanda Brooke asked for some help on some coronavirus interviews that she wants to have, and was somebody available to help? And Kevin Wisher offered to help. Plateau then actually, I'll just read it out. Hey, everybody on the HPR list. I don't know what you're up to right now, but if you're stuck at home like much of the world and thought it would be nice diversion to play a little Dungeons & Dragons, my schedule is pretty open, but I imagine a little point in trying to come up with a time. So essentially, I'm not planning recording these sessions. It's purely a social offer in an attempt to provide relief from the global stress at the moment. And those D&D times are on Wednesday nights and Wednesdays in the evening and Thursdays at night, my time, UTC. That's not very good, is it? when the moon rises over the Hayburn, that's the time it is. Hold on a second and I'll find out what time it actually is. Well, one of them is at 18:30 to 20:30 UTC. No, that's CET, so forget about that. Okay, the days and times are 16:30 to 18:30 UTC on a Wednesday. Wednesday, 16:30. The other one is at Thursday, 20:00 to 22:00. Thursday, 20:00 to 22:00. I don't know if you can still join those, but my son is joined and is really, really, really enjoying them. It's really nice.
Fantastic.
And Taj, announcing the hopefully only COVID-19 self-distancing work stream. The idea is to have a live chat on the mumble server during a portion of the day for people to tune into as they work or avoid work. The intent is to treat it like the HPR New Year's stream and record it for release in HPR. Because, let's face it, we all owe Ken a show. However, that doesn't count as a show. My plan is to join the room at 20:00 EST each day and start a recording. That's, sorry, 12. 1-2. Why, Dave, what is going wrong? 12. Yes, 1-200 EST every day, 1200 Eastern Standard Time. Anything else worth mentioning on there?
I don't think so. That's pretty much all for the mailing list. The events calendar, well, everything's cancelled, so I guess we can skip over that, yeah. And tags and summaries, I'd like to just highlight the fact that we got 28 updates.
Wow.
Over the past month, and we had updates from CRVS, our new host, thank you very much, Windigo, who's a stalwart and sends stuff in all the time, Archer72, thank you very much, and some guy called Dave Morris did a few as well. So 28, I think, is our highest score, if anybody's keeping record. So that's excellent.
Really, I'm really using that missing tags page a lot for finding episodes myself.
Yeah, I know.
Now on the internet and stuff is really a handy resource. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I am convinced.
My sort of thought was doing that would be an interesting prelude to doing something similar to that on a static site. And it seems to be quite a helpful thing.
I have still some shows in here that I haven't commented on. Dave. Okay. Anything else?
I think that's it.
think I went on a bit of a rant there, Dave.
Well, you know, yeah, if it's something you need to say, then
on one hand, there is. Yeah, go on.
As long as it doesn't offend, and I don't see why it would, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, because the thing is, we're not asking people to. On one hand, I'm not asking people. You don't have to submit show notes, but it really, really helps. Even if it's just bullet points, it really helps. But if you look at some tattoo shows where there's just a one-liner, the one about the game he did, it's sufficient. A one-liner is sufficient. In that case, it's sufficient. But if it is something that you refer to in the show notes and that you especially say it'll be in the show notes, then that's kind of, it should be part of the thing. Anyway, I'll shut up. And now I'll be cringy for the next month wondering, should I have edited? Should I not? And you'll
get comments on the next community news.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't like controversy though.
No, fair enough.
Right, I need to go and tidy the house, Dave.
Oh yes, and so do I. Okay.
Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker
Public
Radio.
Hooray! Yep.
All right. Good. Stay healthy, Dave.
Thanks,
Ken. Bye, everyone.
See you soon. Cheers.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.